Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents United States of the Dead by Joseph Taluto, narrated by Graham Halstead. Chapter 1. Major Ken Thornton looked at the bodies of two of his men swinging gently in the breeze. They'd been hung upside down and left just high enough so the zombies couldn't get them. Thornton and his men had reached the rendezvous point later than expected, but they certainly had not thought to see something like this. The men did not know what had happened. All they knew was what was in front of them. 10 men had been dispatched to ambush John Talon, and all were missing, save the two hanging like grim piñatas. Ken was pissed, through and through. 2 of his men were trussed up like pigs to slaughter, and the rest were undoubtedly dead. Talon was proving to be a worthy adversary and a royal pain in the ass. Even the thought of Talon's family being murdered was small consolation in the face of losing a third of his men. Thornton clenched and unclenched his massive fists as he took in the wounds of the 2 men. Milovich had been stabbed, then shot. That was obvious. Kaczynski showed signs of a fight and massive trauma to his eye. It was very clear how he died. Behind him, soldiers fired on exploring and curious zombies, which led to more curious and exploring zombies. Pretty soon, there was going to be a large battle here. Thornton was oblivious as he studied the dead men closer. The ground beneath the 2 had drops of blood that had turned deep red, but not brown like old, dried blood does. That told Thornton Talon had been here pretty recently and was not far ahead. Perhaps another opportunity might present itself, Ken thought. A closer rifle shot interrupted his thoughts and brought him back to reality. It was time to go. As he turned away, a slip of paper in the pocket of the hanging corporal caught his eye. Because of his height, he was able to reach it. Unfolding the note, he quickly read its contents, and his temper, which was always ready to erupt, suddenly flared. 10 fake soldiers came to the party late. 2 were really bad shots, and then there were 8. 8 fake soldiers tried to even the score. Several met with John, and then there were 4. 4 fake soldiers didn't know what to do. A couple fell out of windows, and then there were 2. 2 fake soldiers wanted to have some fun. Both died surprised, and then there were none. Keep coming, and you're a dead man, Thornton. J.T. Son of a bitch, Thornton cursed, crumpling the paper and hurling it from him. That does it. No more Mr. Nice Guy. Mount up, you idiots. We're out of here, he yelled at his men, who were readying to face a charge from a small horde of zombies. The men were more than willing to comply. Sir, a private ran up to Thornton. What do we do about the corporal and the sergeant there, sir? Major Thornton glared at the young recruit. Leave them. They're useless. Take the truck, though, he said, motioning to the vehicle that was parked over by the bait shop in the trees. Sir! The young soldier bolted for the truck, weaved around a pair of zombies that had come out of the woods for the party. He just barely made the cab and slammed the door shut, fired up the big engine and pulled the truck around, tossing off a trio of zombie hangers-on. As the trucks pulled away, one of the last soldiers picked up the crumpled piece of paper and tucked it into his pocket. Whatever pissed off the major so bad might be useful knowing, the soldier figured. The little convoy moved out on Route 50, and each and every soldier had the luxury of watching their former comrades hanging dead from a light pole. Some of the soldiers grumbled quietly, knowing it was a bad thing to leave them unburied, but they were too afraid of the major to protest. But more than one filed away the insult, to be brought again to the surface should the occasion warrant. Beneath the resentment was a healthy dose of fear and apprehension. 10 men had gone to take out a man and his friends in what should have been an easy ambush. But now all of these men were dead, and the killer of those men openly mocked and threatened their leader. What kind of man was John Talon? What kind of men did he lead? Was the Major in over his head? Would they all suffer the same kind of inglorious end? As the little note was passed around, the soldiers began to wonder. How many of them were going to finish this trip? They started with 40, and now they were down to 17. If Captain Tamikara was as successful as the two swinging in the breeze, fishing for zombies, then they were truly screwed. These thoughts ran through the soldiers' heads unbeknownst to Major Thornton. He was sitting in silence, seething over his recent losses and John Talon's insult. He wanted something to destroy, something to tear apart. He needed to send John a message, something he would be sure to understand. "Can't save them all, Johnny," Thornton thought as they reached the outskirts of Coolville. The town looked alive, but it probably had seen better days. The cemetery to the northwest of the town and highway had many new graves, most of them looking like they had been hand-dug recently. An earthen barricade ran the length of the highway but did not encircle the town. It was a curious feature, but one Thornton was grateful for. He didn't need complications right now. The trucks rolled over the ground and around the barricade. It was a simple earthen dam, steep enough to be difficult for a zombie to walk up, but easy enough to crawl. The top was flat and wide enough to accommodate a vehicle. In fact, there were tire ruts that showed vehicles had been to the top. Thornton radioed to the truck behind him to roll alongside of his and to make sure all men had their magazines full. This was going to take some doing. At the center of town, after driving past several curious onlookers and groups of people working small gardens near homes, Thornton called the convoy to a halt. He saw the town was relatively small and sparsely populated, but he didn't really care. He stepped out of the truck and straightened his uniform, figuring to continue his ruse one more time. "Good morning," Ken said to the assembled townspeople across the street. There looked to be about 50 of them in the parking lot of what seemed to be the local grocery store. One man, a gentleman of indeterminate age, walked forward with a noticeable limp. His eyes roamed over the trucks and the assembled soldiers and started to look wet with tears. Thornton was disgusted by the show of emotion, but kept a smile on his face. "Are you in charge?" The man nodded. "When we saw the trucks, we hoped the military had finally gotten hold of the zombies. Are you with a scout group, or some kind of public relations?" the man asked. Thornton smiled. "You might say that. Speaking of scouts, you all didn't happen to meet a man heading east recently on Route 50 there, did you?" The man thought a minute. "Come to think about it, there was a big RV moving in that direction headed east. Passed by here about 3 hours ago, give or take an hour. Might have been the man you're looking for." Thornton mused about that information. That meant Talon was probably 20 to 50 miles ahead, given the terrain and obstacles. In normal times, it would have been closer to 100 miles. "Good. Very good," he thought. He looked down at the man. "How are you situated for supplies? Will you be able to make enough for winter? We have seeds if you need them." Major Thornton was doing his best to continue the ruse. The man grinned. "No, we're pretty well set. We've managed to can a lot of food and save the seeds from previous plantings, so we're actually better off than some. South of here, we even have a small pig farm, so there's pork on occasion." "Well, good. Good for you. You're a better community than a lot I've seen." Ken looked over at the townspeople. "What about defenses? All I saw was that earth dam near the woods as we came to this place. Why didn't you make it go all the way around the town?" The older man cackled a bit. "You ain't the first to ask that. We built that dam to keep the zombies from seeing us as they walked along the road. We can take out any lone zombie or two that comes along. We just have to be careful. If there's more than 5 or 6, we send up the alarm and all of us go scrambling to the top of the hill. The zombies can't do much more than crawl to the top and then we take them out. Simple." The strategist in Ken's head found the simple logic appealing, if a little strange. A mass horde would wipe this place out with little effort, but up until now, the town of Coolville had been lucky.
What about weapons? I was ordered to assess all defensive capabilities of any viable community I came across.
Thornton was rather impressed with himself for that little bit of official-sounding vocabulary.
Some handguns and rifles, mostly shotguns. Hunting stuff, pretty much, the man said. Nothing like what your boys are carrying over there.
He waved a hand at the line of soldiers spread out behind Thornton.
Good. Well, I've seen what I needed to see, learned what I needed to learn. Thank you very much.
Ken stuck out his big paw to the little man and shook his hand vigorously.
What happens next, if you don't mind me asking?
The man said, rubbing his hand a little. Ken smiled and said,
I need to confer with my men and I'll let you know. You go on back to your people and I'll be talking to you all in a minute.
Thornton and the older gentleman parted ways, and the major walked back to his semicircle of men. As he was talking, a few things had occurred to him. In the first place, Talon was close, but ahead in getting to the capital. Second, wholesale slaughter of the people he was planning to enslave would mean he would be in charge of exactly squat. Last, unless there was complete surprise, he might lose a few of his men, and he didn't have the numbers to take that possibility lightly. The best bet was to delay Talon, but the question was how. Thornton reached his men and spoke in low tones.
Get back into the trucks. We're pulling out in a little bit, but we need to create a distraction.
Thornton outlined his plan, and the men smiled. It was simple. It was devious and would accomplish what they wanted. All to the good as far as they were concerned. Some griped about leaving behind ready provisions and entertainment, but they were quieted quickly. After most of the men had gotten back into the trucks, Thornton signaled to Coolville's leader that he needed him. The older man walked over, clearly enjoying his role as representative.
"Yes, Major," he asked.
Thornton put on his best lying face.
There's a large company of troops to the west of us. We need to signal we've been here and this area is secure. Have your people round up as many used tires as possible and bring them to the top of the hill on the north end.
The man gave Thornton an odd look, but hastened to comply. While the townspeople worked quickly to fulfill their obligation, Thornton spent some time looking over the maps. He figured if he swung south and followed 144 to 124, he could pick up 50 again and cross the river into West Virginia before Talon did. After that, it was a straight-end run to the capital, with Talon watching helplessly while Thornton burned the Constitution. While killing John Talon had its merits, Thornton had come to the realization that letting him live and realize his utter failure, coupled with the probable loss of his family, would be a far more fitting revenge. After an hour, Major Thornton could see a decent pile of tires on top of the hill. He ordered one of his men to douse the tires in oil and gas, then set it on fire. The oil and gas caught quickly, and in a short amount of time, the pile was burning well. Thick, black smoke rose high into the sky, able to be seen for miles. Ken looked at it for a minute, then laughed. These idiots just called in every zombie with a good set of eyes within a 40-mile radius, he thought. As he contemplated, it was a nice trap for Talon as well. Hopefully, he'll take some time to get here. The townspeople watched the smoke go up, and Thornton gave them a thumbs up for encouragement. Already, he could see some of the people looking nervously at the tall pillar of black rising from the hilltop, announcing to one and all that the Coolville Buffet was here and open for business. Ken's men climbed back aboard, and as they pulled out, he shouted to the people,
"Good work! You'll be getting some real company soon!"
He tried to hide his grin, but it was a wasted effort. Without a second thought, Ken and his convoy moved out of Coolville and on to the 28-mile detour, which would hopefully put him ahead of Talon for good. Route 144 wound its way along the Muskingum River, with the water on the right and a heavily wooded area on the left. There was little evidence at all of the upheaval in this quiet place, save for the occasional wandering zombies. Across the river was a small campground, and it had been deserted long ago. Thornton and his men were able to make good time until they came to another campground. This one was still in use, but a quick look showed shredded tents, scattered supplies, and blood-splattered equipment. The feeding zombies was another giveaway. As the convoy came to a slow stop, Thornton was able to assess what had happened. A small group of survivors had taken refuge in the campground, and with the water supply nearby, it was a good bet. However, they lost when a surprisingly large group of zombies came upon them in the early morning and overwhelmed them. One man looked to have made a run for the river with another person, possibly a child, but the twin blood streaks across the road signaled the zombies had caught them and dragged them both back to the feeding frenzy. Several zombies were on the road, while the rest, about 15 in all, were hunched over the remains of the travelers. At the sight of the trucks, the zombies began to move towards the vehicles, shambling in an eerie, groaning dance to destruction. Many were covered in blood and left dark footprints on the roadway. Major Thornton got out of the truck, followed by the rest of his men. He hated to have to waste ammo, but if they did it right, it should be done quickly. "Fan out! Pick your targets! Slaughter them!" He grinned as the nearest zombies fell. The last time he gave that order was against a living community. Funny how things turn around, he thought. After the last zombie fell, Thornton ordered some of his men to toss the zombies out of the way and the others to look for anything worth bringing along. A few minutes later, the trucks were rolling again, the men having found a few canned goods and knives, but little else of value. They didn't bother burying the dead, for, as Thornton was fond of saying, why bury fertilizer? Route 144 became Route 124 after emerging from the forest. 124 began in the little town of Hawkingport, a small community on a point of land where the Muskingum and Ohio Rivers merged. Hawkingport had a few businesses scattered here and there, with some homes nestled in the trees along the river. The biggest population center in Hawkingport was the trailer park where the double-wide reigned supreme. As they passed by, Thornton noted the destruction of the trailers, some with big gaping holes ripped in the sides. "Canned meat to the zombies," he said to his driver, who sniggered. "Yes, sir," said the private. Route 124 took them north along the Ohio River, and as they moved, they stopped infrequently at homes which seemed like they might have something of value. One home yielded a goodly supply of dried goods, while another had a decent firearms collection. The owners were nowhere to be found, which, if they were alive, was probably a good thing for them. As Thornton and his men moved further north, Mustafa Island came into view. It was a wooded island, nearly half a mile long and about 500 feet at its widest point. Moving past, Ken could see smoke fires of survivors. Among the trees, he could see about a dozen shapes moving around, and there looked to be a few boats carefully lashed to trees. As far as secure choices went, it was a good idea. Surrounded by water, it guaranteed safety from the zombies. But eventually, supplies would run out, and then the survivors would have to return to the mainland. If they had prepared well, they might actually live to see the end of the zombie plague and return home. Thornton couldn't care less. If they had what he wanted, he took it. If they served a purpose, he used them. If they were in the way, he removed them. And if they crossed him, he killed them. Life was simple for a man without a conscience. Route 124 swung sharply north, and for a while they were in deep woods. The sun was nearly overhead, but the tall trees formed shadows which were hard to penetrate. The undergrowth was thick, and Thornton figured hunting zombies in these woods would be a royal pain in the ass. Travel along these roads was painfully slow. The roads were no longer maintained, and as a result, had many cracks and splits. Anyone traveling too fast would find themselves without tires in a very short amount of time. This was why it had taken so long for Thornton and his men to travel from California to Ohio. The convoy finally came out of the woods into a small populated area. At least, it would have been if the upheaval hadn't happened. As it was, there was little to see even had it been still living. It looked like one of those end-of-life areas where people settle in to quietly finish out their days. A small store was the only convenience, and a single gas station served the small population. There wasn't any zombie activity to be seen, but as recent events taught the faithful, things weren't always what they seemed. 124 finally reconnected with Route 50, and Thornton felt like he was getting ahead. After the setbacks and loss of men, he felt like he had finally gained the upper hand.
"Sir, you can still see the smoke, sir,"
the driver of the truck pointed out. Thornton looked and laughed quietly. "We're 12 miles away, and that pillar of smoke is as clear as an arrow. Talon has to be heading that way now," he thought. Out loud, he said, "Slow down. I want to see the maps and figure our next move." Ken quickly found his bearings, and as the truck slowly moved north, he planned his next move. It was nearly midday, and as strange as it sounded, he needed to start thinking about a safe place to spend the night. As it was, they were on a collision course with several towns of dubious safety, and Thornton decided to try and get by the towns and head for the hills of West Virginia. "When you see signs for 618, follow them. That will get us across the river and reconnect with Route 50. We'll find a place to spend the night after that."
"Yes, sir,"
said the private, swerving around a stalled vehicle and increasing his speed. He had a hard job, watching for road hazards and trying to keep on course. As they moved around a large bend in the river, a huge island came into view. He pointed it out to the major, who dismissed it out of hand.
"I know it looks good, but we may as well keep moving if we can. The further we get to D.C., the better chance we have of taking care of business before Talon. Keep driving."
The island, Blennerhassett Island Historical State Park, was formerly the home of Harmon Blennerhassett, a wealthy Irishman once accused of treason by Thomas Jefferson for plotting to establish an empire in the Southwest with Aaron Burr. A large restored mansion lay on the east end of the island, but from Thornton's point of view, the island was just wilderness. The road wound through a large town, and there was a lot of devastation. A fire sometime in the past wiped out a good portion, leaving blackened ruins for blocks. Cars were all over the place, many left with open doors and belongings inside, a sure sign someone fled when the zombies came close. Here and there lay skeletal remains, the reminders of the upheaval. Some of the remains showed clear signs of head trauma, making it easy to tell which ones used to be zombies. The deeper the convoy moved through town, the worse the devastation became. Thornton could see where people had made last stands against the hordes of zombies. Rings of bodies around ruined homes and businesses told tales of desperate battles against the undead. One building, an aquarium shop, had dozens of skeletal remains lying around its parking lot. The smashed-in windows and scorch marks were a familiar ending to that chapter. The trucks entered the business district, and there was immediate activity. Down every side street and alley had to be dozens of roaming zombies. At the passage of the trucks, they began a slow, measured pursuit, hopeless in ambition but determined in execution. Thornton signaled his driver to speed up and ordered the other trucks to close ranks as much as they could. If they were getting this much of a response this early, they would do better to try and run through before zombies ahead of them tried to block their way. It was hard enough with the cars and bodies, but a sizable swarm of ghouls could stop the trucks dead in more ways than one. The trucks quickly made their way through the rest of the town, and Thornton could see the river peeking through gaps in the homes and businesses. Pretty soon they would be in West Virginia, and Thornton hoped they would be able to make a clean run to D.C. He had no idea what waited for him at the nation's capital, but he figured it couldn't be that bad.
"Sir," his driver yelled, "behind us!" Thornton looked out the rearview mirror and blanched. Nearly 300 zombies of assorted shapes and sizes were following the trucks at various speeds. Shit. Well, if we keep moving, then we should be able to outrun them. If nothing serious is blocking our way, they won't be a problem. Thornton hoped he was right. A horde of that size could easily overwhelm his small band, and he didn't come all this way to get slaughtered. But even as the situation looked grim, Thornton's mind was already running with escape strategies. Push came to shove, he'd make a break for the river, trusting in the zombies' aversion to water, and get himself away from the killing. If he had to leave his men to die, so be it. He'd been on his own before and managed pretty well. The trucks reached the edge of the bridge, and Thornton immediately saw a problem. The bridge was blocked by three cars that looked like they had wanted to all get through at the same time. They could clear the cars, but that meant they had to use up precious minutes to do so, and they didn't have seconds to spare. Thornton was about to order the private to ram his way through when the private spoke up.
"Sir, why don't we take the track, sir? Our wheels are large enough, and there's enough clearance under the trucks to pass over the rails."
Thornton looked quickly and saw it was possible.
"Do it, Corporal."
"Sir, I'm just a private, sir."
"Not anymore. Now get us across."
The zombie horde, over 400 strong, began their pre-slaughter groaning and wheezing since they were only 200 feet away. In the last truck in the line, the men were scrambling to get weapons and magazines ready. They hadn't received the order to fire, but if it was them or the zombies, they were going to sell their lives dearly. Fortunately, the trucks began to roll away from the stoppage and over to the railroad tracks that ran parallel to the highway bridge crossing the river. It was one of those old iron trestles, rusty brown and black. Corporal Halliman eased the first truck onto the tracks at the crossing, being careful not to go too fast and bounce themselves right off the bridge. The train bridge was not much wider than the trucks, but since the trucks had to drive over the rails, the left tires were inches away from falling off the bridge. Halliman opened his door and slowly worked his way over the river, just watching the railroad ties and his front tire. The truck driver behind him did the same thing, followed in turn by the last truck. The men in the last truck were at their wits' end. They had watched helplessly as the zombie horde had nearly caught them once, and while the first two trucks were slowly getting onto the tracks, the zombies were coming for them again. At the last second, when the first decayed hand reached for the truck, the vehicle lurched forward, moving onto the tracks. The men watched the zombies give chase, then cheered when they saw the zombies couldn't navigate the railroad tracks. The first two to try it tumbled and fell down the hilly slope to the water's edge. The next few to try were a little luckier, but they also fell. As the trucks moved away, the soldiers began to relax, unclenching their rifles and letting out long breaths of relief. More than one commented on the need to change their shorts. The lead truck made its way slowly across the river, and Thornton found himself studying the town across the bridge. In the background rose the foothills of the Appalachian Mountains, and Thornton knew his road was nearly at an end. Bumping off the rails, Major Thornton and his men took a break, stretching out and looking back the way they had come. The zombies kept trying to cross the railroad bridge, and they fell and were washed away by the river. The ones who didn't fall off were stuck in between the ties and had no way of figuring out how to get out. As the men stretched and eased cramped muscles, the idle chatter began to die away as they looked around. The city was quiet, but every man there felt like they were being watched. Idle bits of debris lay scattered about, and the papers picked up by the small breeze seemed unnaturally loud. Nervous hands held ready rifles, and the men slowly spread out, guns at the ready. No threat was imminent. Nothing manifested itself as danger, but in every man, some forgotten instinct was screaming danger. Thornton felt it himself, but he didn't see it as an immediate danger. It was more of a palpable sense of death and decay. The men had crossed the river and were headed into the Appalachians, and that was the barrier that kept back the worst of the darkness.
This land is dead, he thought. All of it. No one escaped. He couldn't help himself from these dark thoughts, so pervasive was the feeling of...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?